seal out drafts, dust, and moisture with MD brand weather stripping from Menards. A well-sealed home is more comfortable and energy efficient. We have the largest selection of in-stock weather stripping with over 100 products available to take home and start lowering your energy bills today. Save big money on weather stripping right now at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
I sit alone in my room on this seventh floor, writing what will surely be my last will and testament. The heroin, which allows me to forget and to sleep for the last couple of years, has lost its power to keep the screaming terrors away. The drug destroys my body and mind, gradually eating away at them like a corrosive acid, now that I have become a slave to it. And yet, without it, I do not sleep for weeks, but instead, continuously see the scenes from that terrible night running through my head on repeat, as worsening waves of madness crash on the shores of my consciousness. In the caverns under the town of Frost Hollow, I found the meaning of true madness. Ever since I escaped that den of horrors, it is difficult to tell what is real and what is only the feverish delirium of the unhinged mind. Even now, they wait behind the door to this cheap, bare-rented room. They drag their claws over the wood. I hear them hissing in that strange, ancient tongue, the one I first heard in the tombs of rock that had been undisturbed for countless millennia. I had first heard the rumors of an unexplored cavern from my friend, an experienced caver named Sonia, who had explored caverns all over the world. I had been looking for some excitement in my life, some break from the constant monotony and boredom of simply working and sleeping. I'd gone caving quite a few times over the year leading up to the trip, but I was not nearly as experienced and had never explored a supposedly virgin passageway of cavern before. "How do you know no one's gone down there?" I asked, curious. We sat across from each other at a local diner, getting some early breakfast before our planned descent. The sunrise was still another half hour away, the sky flat and dark. We would be joined by Sonia's husband, Phil, who would meet us there shortly after sunrise. I repressed an urge to yawn, chugging half of the steaming hot coffee in one long swallow. Sonia leaned close to me. Her nearly colorless blue eyes reminded me of chunks of ice floating down a muddy stream. "Phil's friend just found it randomly," she whispered before glancing around conspiratorially, as if she feared someone would care enough to eavesdrop on our conversation about a cave. "Well, it's in the middle of a farm, and Phil's friend, Jack Graysell, owns the entire property and surrounding woods. Jack says he noticed the cows kept going over to a certain spot in the field where it got really hot during the summertime. They would all gather around this little indentation in the grass. After seeing it a few times, Jack got curious and went to investigate what the cows were doing. He found a small hole in the ground, almost entirely covered by weeds and grass. He said he felt a cool breeze constantly blowing out of the hole, a breeze that smelled like burning matches and charred metal. After bringing out some shovels and digging down a couple of feet, Jack realized that the hole wasn't a hole at all, but the beginning of a steep passageway leading deep into the bowels of the earth. The owner of the land decided to unofficially call the newly discovered cavern Graysell Caverns. Out of respect for him, this was also the name we all used. This is the story of how I found myself in the bowels of a strange subterranean tunnel. A tunnel where creatures beyond my comprehension slunk and hunted, skittering monstrosities who would be more at home in my nightmare. After grabbing a couple coffees to take with us, Sonia drove over to Grey Soul Farms. Cows stood in the grassy fields, huddled in tight circles as they repetitively chewed. The thin silhouette of Jack Graysoul waited for us next to the herd. He had a face like a raisin, I thought to myself. I watched his thin, shaky body standing in the middle of the overgrown grassy field. Jack stared down blankly at something that only he could see. Sonia and I started unloading some equipment from the car while we waited for Phil. Once we had the backpacks loaded with some simple supplies, such as water, food, headlamps, rope, a couple extra batteries, some buck knives, and radios, we headed over to accompany Jack. We weren't taking much, as we didn't really expect to be down there for more than 6 to 7 hours at the most. Jack Graysoul's weathered old face was as slack and expressionless as that of a corpse. He stared down at the ground as if he were in a trance, waving back and forth slowly on his feet like a plant in a light breeze. "Jack?" Sonia called out as we approached. I could hear the man's teeth chattering as we got nearer. "Hey, what are you doing over there this early? You interested in accompanying us down there?" Sonia joked. But Jack might as well have been totally deaf for all the reaction he gave. Sonia glanced over at me with an anxious expression. I wondered if the old man was having a stroke. I quickly walked over to where he stood, staring down at the black circular hole about 3 feet across directly in front of his feet. The entrance to Grey Soul Caverns stared up at us like a sightless pupil. As I drew within a feet of Jack and looked straight into his blank eyes, I noticed something alarming. His pupils were quickly dilating and constricting before my eyes. They would shrink to tiny pinpoints, then a couple seconds later, rapidly expand until they became dark and serious. I could see his thready, rapid heartbeat pulsating in a vein on the side of his temple. Alarmed, I reached forward and put my hand on his shoulder. Instantly, he came to life, like a man waking up from a nightmare. Shrieking, he looked at me with fully dilated pupils, reminding me of a panicked deer surrounded by wolves. His quavering old man's voice shook with ineffable existential horror and mortal fear. He took a step back away from us, seeming to realize where he was and what he was doing. He looked around, confused, then straight at me and Sonia. His eyes focused with anger and fear, as if we were demons here to drag him down the hell. His eyes flickered back and forth between us constantly, Jack raising a trembling hand and pointed it straight at my heart.
"It's you," he said,
his voice dropping to a harsh whisper. His teeth chattered despite the warm spring air. His skin looked deadly pale.
"You're the one who will bring an end to humanity. Who will release the ruler of nightmares upon us?"
He continued the point accusingly for a long moment at me, his face turning chalk white. Then his eyes rolled back in his head. Slowly, he stumbled and fell backwards onto the soft grass of the field.
"Jack!" Sonia cried, running over to the old man.
Jack's breaths had started to come in slow, drawn-out gurgles, like a man with a slit throat trying to breathe. Frothy blood bubbled from his lips as they turned blue.
staring up at the endless expanse of cloudless sky, he exhaled one last shuddering breath and died. Phil showed up only a couple of minutes later. He found me and Sonia in a state of utter panic, both of us bent double over the still body of Jack. Sonia was on the phone with 911, and I was trying to give Jack chest compressions. The way his fingernails and lips shone with that...
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Cyanotic blue cast made me feel sick and weak. I knew it was futile, that I was simply playing with the corpse at this point, but I didn't know what else to do. I felt if I didn't do something, I might explode. I heard the faint wailing of sirens approaching as Sonia's panicked voice continued babbling to the 911 operator. Phil stood by her side, his tall, dark features searching and lost.
"Oh God, I think he's dead,"
Sonia cried over and over to the operator, as if she had thought the operator could do anything about it. I didn't hear what the operator said in response. As the ambulance pulled up, I gave up on chest compressions. I stood up and took a step back, looking sadly down at the kindly old man's dead body. The paramedics ran over. Phil, Sonia, and I stood back while they worked on the corpse, trying to shock the heart back into life. But Jack's open eyes stayed glazed as they stared sightlessly up into eternity. The paramedics left. A couple of police officers stayed behind to ask us a few routine questions. Eventually, after an hour or so, they left too. "What a effed up day," Phil said, shaking his head grimly. "Do you guys still want to do this? Maybe it's an omen from God telling us to go home." Sonia and I exchanged a glance, then we both nodded at the same time. "Definitely," she said. "It's sad what happened to Jack, but realistically, we don't know what's going to happen to this property now that he has passed away. It may get sold or taken by the bank for all we know. This could be our one and only chance to explore this cave." "I don't believe in omens. I'm still down," I said, feeling slightly sick from the experience. I still remembered how Jack's body had cracked under the weight of my chest compressions, how his ribs had snapped like bones, shattering in greedy hands. "We'll do it in the memory of Jack. I plan to put this up on YouTube." I pulled my GoPro out of my bag, turning it on. Phil groaned at that. "Do we have any idea how far down this cave goes?" Phil asked. I felt a sense of relief now that the topic had changed from the death of the old man. "I sent a little camera down on a rope, but it only went down about 100 feet, Sonia responded. "It's pretty steep at first, then it levels out. I couldn't really make much after it leveled out, but it looks like it should be easy to climb down. There's plenty of handholds, lots of jutting rocks." Phil put on his headlamp and small pack. As he crawled down into the hole, his tanned face looked up at us and gave us one last devilish grin. Once he had gone down a few dozen feet, Sonia started descending. She looked excited and happy. I noticed how she couldn't stop smiling as she disappeared from view. I watched their lights grow smaller and dimmer in the circular tunnel. I marveled at how perfectly circular the entrance was. It almost didn't even look natural. Taking in a deep breath, I followed my friends down into the dark. "This isn't too bad," I said as I climbed down. The jutting rocks gave plenty of handholds and footholds for us. It wasn't so tight that it felt like a coffin either.
It only gets easier from here, Sonia called up.
How do you know? I asked. You said you'd never been here before. She laughed.
I know. Probably just wishful thinking, she said.
Far below us, Phil's voice drifted up, faint and weak. He had already reached the bottom.
The tunnel really looks open down here, guys, he called. It's somewhat bizarre, though.
What do you mean by that? Sonia asked.
I looked down, seeing Sonia and I would reach the bottom in seconds.
Forget it. I'll let it be a surprise.
I heard her drop down. Slowly and carefully, I lowered myself down the last few feet. There was a short fall onto a smooth granite floor. I looked up, seeing what Phil and Sonia were so memorized by. Oh, wow, I said, speechless. I blinked rapidly, wondering if the image would clear like a mirage. The tunnel was cut into a perfectly triangular shape, each side about 7 feet long. The ceiling met in a point above our heads. All along the smooth walls of gray rock, I saw thousands of black orbs peeking out. They looked similar to obsidian, but they were perfectly smooth and circular, each about the size of an orange. They were formed into interlocking diagonal patterns and followed the tunnel straight down as far as the eye could see. What is this place? Sonia asked, taking a tentative step forward. I looked up, seeing the distant pinpoint of sunlight far above our heads. Our voices continued to echo off down the massive tunnels, disappearing in eerie waves into the thick curtain of shadows.
Are you recording all this?
Phil asked me. I laughed giddy.
Of course! This is internet gold right here, I said. No one's going to believe that this isn't man-made, however.
I can't even believe it. Do you think Jack was playing a joke on us or something?
Jack had the sense of humor of a wet paper towel, Phil whispered, shaking his head. No, he wouldn't do something like this.
Well, let's go check it out, Sonia said, taking a step forward.
Her headlamp bobbed up and down rapidly, throwing dancing shadows through the triangular tunnel. It continued straight ahead without the slightest deviation or curve, disappearing off into a dark point in the distance. We walked as fast as we could, excited to see where, if anywhere, the strange tunnel led. Phil, always the conspiracy theorist, babbled excitedly.
This has to be aliens, man, he said, running his fingers through his dark hair.
I bet that scientists will find out that this crap's millions of years old when we get back up and tell everyone. Maybe aliens came to Earth in ancient times and made a bunch of stuff underground. Gradually, as we walked, I noticed the tunnel opening up. The pointed, triangular ceiling rose up higher above our heads and the walls moved outwards, as if we were walking up a triangular funnel. At first, it was so subtle that I didn't believe it when Sonia pointed it out.
No, look, she said, raising her hand above her head.
When we first started down this weird tunnel, my fingers were only maybe a foot away from the top. Now it's a couple of feet. I was about to respond when our headlamps illuminated something standing in the middle of the tunnel.
What the F is that?
I whispered, stopping cold in my tracks. Phil and Sonia looked up at the abomination at the same time. Its back was to us. It stood nearly as tall as the tunnel, which was now about 12 feet high. The bottom half looked black and spidery with dozens of long, jointed legs. A bloody white spine rose out of the mass of legs. inhumanly long, skeletal arms stretched out in front of it. Its face was pointed away from us, but the back of its head resembled an enormous pointed skull with deep fissures like the cracks of an earthquake running through the bone. The abomination stayed as still as a statue, and for a long moment, I wondered if we were looking at some macabre work of art. Then suddenly, one of its insectal legs twitched. A moment later, the other legs started jerking and twisting. There was a sound like bones shattering as it rose up to its full height, turning around to face us. Its face was like something from a nightmare, melting and reforming constantly like dripping candle wax. I would see a black eye appear on its forehead, then a grinning mouth on its chin. Then the features would get sucked back into the folds of melting flesh. After a few...
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
In a few moments, two enormous eyes appeared on its face, dark and cold like craters on the surface of the moon. The mouths and noses disappeared back into the dripping skin, and only two lidless eyes remained, emanating a cold reptilian consciousness beyond the ability of my mind to comprehend. I felt terror radiating from its body like freezing waves.
"Free me!"
it cried in a gurgling voice that seethed with insanity. It had a shrieking metallic ringing behind every word that gave it an alien quality.
"Free me, and I will give you the waters of eternal life. Within me, I contain the seeds of immortality. Within the nightmares, we live forever, always together, never alone."
"Who are you?"
I asked, terrified. The black reptilian skin of the enormous beast glistened as it knelt down, its massive face drawing near to mine. A sideways mouth bursted out of the liquefied flesh, showing hundreds of fangs growing like tumors from its white, bloodless gums. The fangs varied in size from only a couple of inches to long, sword-like projections that stabbed into the creature's flesh, causing white blood glittering like rainbows to fall like raindrops all around me.
"I have many names,"
it hissed, its thousand voices rising and falling in crashing waves of sound.
"I was present at the beginning. Then this planet was no more than dead cliffs and endless freezing oceans. Those holy ones who search for us, the ancient ones, call me Nerahoth."
"How do we free you?" Phil asked, looking terrified. He held Sonya's hand tightly.
"By letting me into your mind and body,"
Nerahoth cried, shaking the cavern.
"I was thrown down here, cursed and forgotten. I cannot leave this place of shadows within this body. But in the body of another, my consciousness can be free, and the seeds of new life can spread beyond this prison."
"There's no way anyone's going to do that," I said, my eyes widening as Nerahoth's reptilian skin turned towards me in fury. "I mean, you're asking one of us to give up our individuality, our lives, right?"
"I am asking you to become one with me and gain power undreamt of by mortals,"
it cried.
"I have within me the fountain of life, the waters that send death away screaming."
I glanced anxiously at Phil and Sonia, wondering if we would have to run. "The answer is no," I said. "I'm sorry." "Yeah, we can't do that," Phil said, backing me up. "But anyways, I think this trip has ended. It's time to turn around."
"You will never return,"
Nirahoth cried, slithering away from us.
"If you do not accept salvation, then you must accept death."
Within seconds, it slunk away from us, backpedaling on its many skittering legs into the shadows. All around us, a rumbling started. There was a pounding that crashed through the rock tunnel, as if an insane blacksmith was hammering onto a massive anvil. The ringing of crashing rocks started off slowly, with a few stones smashing down towards us with heavy blasts of sound. Within seconds, the cacophony sped up, rising into a constant stream of destruction. The black orbs were spinning in place all up and down the tunnel, their glossy obsidian surfaces flashing with sparkles of blue light.
"It's collapsing!"
Phil cried, running back in the direction we came, holding Sonia's hand as she tried to keep up with him. I could only stare for a long moment, not sure what to do. It seemed that the direction Phil was heading stood closer to total collapse.
"Wait!"
I cried, but my voice was drowned out by the destruction all around us. I felt a rock smash into my shoulder, sending me down to my feet. I heard Phil give a scream of pain, then another stone came down and smashed into my forehead. I remember seeing everything spinning around me as the world went black. I awoke to find my headlamp still shining straight up into the dusty tunnel. Large chunks of the tunnel had slid out of place and crashed to the stone floor. The granite chunks that had fallen looked unnaturally smooth, most of them in the shapes of cylinders or cubes and varying in size from that of an egg to that of a small car. My head throbbed. It felt as if a tight belt of fire were wrapped around my temples. Groaning, I put my fingers up to my forehead. They came back slick with blood. Slowly, I started pushing myself up on my feet. I was relieved that nothing seemed broken. I had a deep gash running from the center of my scalp down to my left temple and some shallower cuts on my shoulders and back, but I knew none of that was life-threatening.
"Sonia?"
I whispered, my voice coming out weak and strained. I reached into my pack and found a bottle of water. I chugged it quickly in one long swallow.
"Phil?"
I cried again, this time stronger. I heard a soft weeping nearby. Staggering, I followed the sound. Sonia was bloody and covered in cuts and scrapes, sitting next to Phil's prone form. I saw Phil's right arm pinned under a massive slab of granite, his arm disappearing from the elbow down in a spreading puddle of thick, dark blood.
"Oh God, Max, I think he's hurt really bad,"
she wept. Phil's eyes rolled wildly in his head, his face pale and bloodless. I looked down the way we had come up, seeing the entire tunnel blocked by massive slabs of stone, many with strange black orbs peeking out like the lenses of cameras. I don't know how much time passed. My phone died after a day, and then we were counting the endless darkness and breaths and tears. Phil swam in and out of consciousness as his arm putrefied and blackened around the crush site.
After a couple of days, Sonia and I agreed that something had to be done. We told Phil we would need to amputate his arm. He was half delirious, but he came back long enough to understand us and nod weakly. We made a fire with Phil's pack, trying to find fuel to put into it to get it roaring. As it grew, I saw one of the black orbs near the flames abruptly ignite, as if it had been covered in gasoline. Blue, almost colorless flames rose from its surface. We started throwing the small black orbs onto the fire until it rose high in the air. I sanitized the buck knife with the flames and pulled a rope tourniquet tied around Phil's arm. He was cautious but seemingly insane, talking to himself more than anyone else.
"Are you gonna get the car started without a key?"
he gurgled to someone only he could see. "We need to look around. It has to be here somewhere." "Phil, can you hear me, bud? We need to fix your arm. We need to get you out of this mess, okay?" I said as comfortingly as I could. Phil's eyes rolled wildly, but they didn't meet my own. I sighed and looked over to Sonia. "Let's do it," I said, giving a grim nod. I pulled the buck knife out, slicing quickly down the flesh next to the tourniquet. His veins throbbed like fat worms as the blackened.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Necromantic skin split easily under the blade, releasing a rancid-smelling gas that hissed out of the wound. I couldn't believe how hard it was to slice all the way through the arm. It felt like I was stuck in that hellish task forever. Phil's eyes rolled into the back of his head as his skin turned the color of clotted milk.
"God, Jesus, make it stop!"
Phil whispered over and over, exhaling ragged, pain-filled breaths. The blood spurted from the blackened, dying tissue all over the dust-covered cavern floor, covering my hands in its warm, slick embrace. After what was probably only 3 or 4 minutes, but felt like hours, I had sliced all the way down to the bone. The infected tissue of his arm spurted great gouts of orange pus mixed with rivulets of blood. The hard part was over. Standing up, I took my steel-toe sneaker and stomped down on his arm as hard as I could. Phil cried out in a powerful voice, as if all the agony and suffering in the world was contained in that one shriek. The bone snapped under my weight with the sound like a tree branch cracking. A moment later, Phil rolled away from the rock that had pinned him into place for so long. Something alien and spongy was shoved into my face. A mass of destroyed red tissue pulsating in time with a runaway heartbeat. At first, shell-shocked and revolted, my mind couldn't comprehend that I was looking at the stump of Phil's mutilated arm. I hardened my heart and forced the giddiness and madness to the back of my mind. The time had come to cauterize the wound. "Sonia, give it to me," I said with a tremor in my voice. I reached out a hand towards her, a hand stained in Phil's blood. It looked as if I was wearing a wet crimson glove. Sonia only stared blankly at me for a long moment, however. A surge of anger ran up in my chest. "Sonia, toughen the F up. He's gonna die if you just sit there." I swore at her, hearing my deep, angry voice bounce around the caverns. Sonia pulled back, as if she were struck. Inwardly, I cursed having a woman as my only able-bodied companion in this situation.
She was a skilled enough caver, but what would happen if violence and blood came over us? What would happen if, or more realistically, when we needed to fight? Grimly, Sonya leaned forward and yanked the burning black orb out of the roaring fire, handing it to me on the end of a buck knife that had barely pierced its hard, strange exterior. The handle of the knife felt coarse and splintery under my filthy skin. I put it to the spongy stump of Phil's arm. The stump twitched violently. Phil tried to pull away as black smoke rose from the burning flesh. There was a smell like bacon sizzling. The searing meat of Phil's arm blackened and crisped under the heat of the orb, which had become no more than a cylinder of glowing blue embers by this point. I felt all of a sudden sick and giddy. I didn't know if I wanted to laugh or vomit. I felt like I was on the verge of some kind of madness, that the stress and insanity of the experience had started to shatter my mind. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he appeared to go into a seizure for a few seconds. With a long exhalation of breath, he finally mercifully lost consciousness. It's hard to admit it, even this close to the end, but a small, sick piece of me was jealous of Phil. Most likely, he would be dead soon, maybe within hours, while Sonya and I would slowly starve and dehydrate like animals over a period of weeks. I looked over at her body and soft skin, seeing the feminine curves of her hips and chest. She was a beautiful woman. I knew Phil to be a lucky man, at least before this trip he was. I watched her body, wondering if I had to eat her or Phil if I had to. Did I have an iron heart that would allow me to slice into my friends and consume their raw, cold flesh? Perhaps by that point, it would be hunger and madness driving me forward, and I wouldn't even hesitate. I shuddered at the very thought. I fell asleep that night, having strange dreams of massive gods with melting faces sitting in judgment in a circle around me. We had very little food or water left. No one knew we were down here. Rescue was not coming. When I awoke, I found myself alone. Phil had died from his injuries while I slept, the black streaks of septic shock spreading up his arm towards his heart. His eyes stared sightlessly up at the rock ceiling. "Sonya?" I called out, my heart racing as I sat up.
"Where are you?"
My headlamp was growing dim. I looked at my pack, realizing I was on the last of my batteries. I saw a silhouette walking out of the darkness, the thin, pale form of Sonya. She was trembling badly.
"I saw them," she said. "Nirhoth and its priests. The priests aren't human. They look reptilian with sideways mouths and too many eyes." She shuddered.
"Why would you do that?" I asked. Her eyes grew distant.
"You know we're not getting out of here alive," she said.
"Not on our own. I wanted to see what it offered. It says that if we take a piece of its nightmare into us, we will gain the power to leave this place, that it simply wants to see the surface and spread its nightmares there." I shook my head. "Insanity," I muttered. "We'd be better off dead." Sonya nodded.
"My thoughts exactly," she responded grimly. I didn't realize what she meant until the next day, when I woke up and found her hanging next to Phil's body, her tongue swollen and blue as it poked out of her cyanotic lips. And then, I was truly alone.
Soon after Sonya committed suicide, the last of the batteries for the headlamp died. I had ran out of food and had only a small sip of water left.
I don't know how much time passed in the darkness, starving and raving, following the tunnel by running my hands over the walls. I heard many things skittering in the darkness, and a few times, I heard the demonic voice of Nirahoth as it split and distorted.
"You are on death's door,"
it hissed.
"Will you not drink from the fountain of life?"
I couldn't tell where the voice came from in the maddening blackness. It seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. I'd lost nearly all of my sanity in that pit of shadows by this point. I tried laughing constantly to keep my spirits up, and when that failed, I simply cried.
"I'll do it," I wailed. "I'll do it. Just let me see the sky again. Get me out of here, Nirahoth."
Everything went deathly silent all around me. Then a laugh rang out like the grinding of glass. In front of me, I saw a tornado of fire descending from the ceiling, surrounding the massive, spidery form of Nirahoth. It rose its skeletal arms upwards, as if it were Zeus calling down lightning. In the sudden brightness, I saw the fiery form of snakes slithering and centipedes skittering forwards in that tornado. Each massive creature sculpted from flames in the spinning cyclone of energy. Nirahoth reached into the tornado of fire with its sharp points of fingers and plucked something small from it. The fire instantly dissipated. In its hand, I saw a tiny swirling orb that looked like it contained a firestorm within it.
"The nightmare seed,"
Nirahoth gurgled as it skittered forward towards me. I could only stare, open-mouthed.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
And starving. I hadn't slept in days, it felt like, and everything seemed slow and unreal. In a blur, the skeletal arm shot out and forced the orb into my mouth. Despite the raging fire within it, it felt freezing cold. As it touched my tongue, it gave off a sensation like frostbite all throughout my mouth. I screamed and tried spitting it out, but it seemed to have a mind of its own. It started liquefying, dropping down my throat. I felt something cancerous and sick spreading throughout my body, radiating out from my heart and stomach to every inch of it. I tried to scream, but it caught behind my teeth. I fell to my knees, clawing at my face as this insane alien laugh continued surrounding all down the tunnel. I fell unconscious and woke up under a beautiful sky in the fields of Grey Soul Farms. Soon after, I realized that my life would never be the same. Everywhere I went, I could hear the wailing voice of Nirahoth. Behind the trees, I always saw skittering shadows. Creatures with long, spidery legs that stalked me every day and night. I slept with every light in the house turned on, yet when I woke up, they would all be shut off, and I would find myself in darkness next to something in the bed with far too many legs, and a face that dripped like burning wax. I sold everything I owned and tried to move far away to give as much distance between myself and those cursed caverns as I could. But the nightmares followed me like a shadow. I realized what a fool I was in those moments of madness. Sonia was much wiser than myself. I should have killed myself or died rather than allowing that thing inside of me. Even now, I could feel it creeping through my heart, spreading through my blood. I feel it trying to crawl its way out of my throat, the thin, black legs peeking out at the back of my esophagus. I only hope that when I jump and feel the bones shatter against the concrete far below, I will kill whatever it is inside of me. For I fear the consequences for the world, if it were to escape.